Now, tomorrow is World Sleep Day, and I'm sure many of us can remember a time where we've had difficulty getting to sleep. Or maybe you've woken up at some terrible hour and found yourself tossing and turning, wondering why the night suddenly seems so long. So, and what stops an occurrence like that from becoming a regular pattern? And what might make us susceptible to insomnia in the first place? Oh my goodness, so many questions. Such an important topic. I personally love a good 8 to 9 hours. So I'm very excited this morning to talk to Dr. Moira Younger, who is a health psychologist with the Sleep Health Foundation. Dr. Young is going to help us unravel a few myths around insomnia and explore what healthy sleep practices look like. Moira, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Willie. My pleasure.
Now, what portion of the population struggles to maintain a healthy sleep pattern?
Well, our recent data from a couple of years ago showed that just a random survey said that 40% or so of Australians reported inadequate sleep. But we did some further digging down and investigations of that and recognised that about 12 to 15% actually have chronic insomnia. So they meet the diagnostic criteria for having poor sleep at least 3 times a week for at least 3 months on end. Everyone who's listening, probably everyone knows that they do have the odds poor sleep, but mostly when our stress settles or when something, it's sort of an acute period, it should go back to being fairly normal. That's another, we can talk about that in a minute, that it doesn't need to be unbroken. We have to manage our expectations about what good sleep looks like.
Yeah, and my next question, I guess, is what's the difference between insomnia and just a couple of bad nights of sleep?
Yeah, well, it's a shame we call it the same thing, really. As in, you know how people, the longevity is the difference. Like insomnia as a condition just needs that longevity of the diagnostic criteria of how long it's been, that sort of stuff. And maybe too, the difference can be when we talk about chronic insomnia or the condition of insomnia, it's when there's despite adequate opportunity. So sometimes you might have like a newborn baby or you've got shift work or there's other things that that's why you're not getting sleep. It might not be, it's sort of this other external thing. So it's when people have got stacks of opportunity, they've got the perfect sort of all the dots lined up and they can sleep, but then they, with the opportunity, they can't.
They're actually not falling asleep.
Right. Okay. So in the same way that sometimes people talk about anxiety and depression, but it's not really the full-on condition. So same with insomnia. It may not be the capital I insomnia. So we think that 12 to 15% is still too high. We think that's a really, on a population level, that's really high. And we'd love to see that people having the odd poor night or they've had a really awful period, like perhaps the bushfires or the death of a loved one or a really stressful period, and they do have rotten sleep, like for maybe weeks on end. But we'd love for people to hear a few tips about how to not make that become a chronic condition, because that's what I've seen for so many years now, that people often say, there might be a woman in their 60s and they say, it started with my first child. And I think, wow, that first child is probably 30s or, it's a long time. And it perpetuates. Sometimes people think, I just thought that was my lot in life. I thought I was a poor sleeper because my mum was or my dad was.
I would be nobody's friend.
If you didn't sleep it, I know.
What is good sleep versus, and you kind of touched on it just before, like setting the expectations around sleep, because
we want people to have a good sleep that they feel quite refreshed, but not necessarily as soon as they wake up, because sometimes if you judge it by as soon as you wake up, you probably think, gee, I've got really poor sleep. But once you get going and you've had a shower and you're moving around, you had your breakfast, within the hour or so, you can judge how you feel, like whether you do feel like you've been restored and refreshed. So we want people to have that sort of a diagnostic criteria, or for them to reflect on that. It doesn't have to be how you feel as soon as you wake up. It also doesn't mean that you don't wake up at all. It's quite normal for people to wake a few times during the night, but it's not normal to stay awake for hours on end. So it's important for people not to get too fretful if they're awake and then look at a clock and then confirm the time And that only tends to just exacerbate the worry that, oh, no, the countdown is on, I've only got four hours left. Or, so we try to get people to really recognise that and resist the temptation to look at their phone or their device or a clock. We do like people to really think about not having a phone or device plugged into them right next to their head, because it's really nice to not have that temptation to be scrolling through things either before bed or in the middle of the night. Or it's a bit of a risk that a barrier to good sleep, those screens, which we could talk for 2 hours about.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I was going to say we've only got like 8 minutes, but I could talk to you for hours on this.
So put the you know, if people do need it for their alarm, and I do as well, just have it across the room or in the ensuite or in the hallway, and you'll still hear it. And the rule of thumb for children too, while they're getting a brand new phone, if they get, you know, or an iPad, just to not have it in their rooms at night would be a fantastic lifelong habit to start treating that with the kids, because the horse has bolted a bit in the last 10 years.
The Sleep Health Foundation, you published a piece recently about preventing chronic insomnia. So that's avoiding this escalation of short-term poor sleep. Can you tell us a little bit more about your findings and the recommendations?
Yeah, for sure. We do know, there's been a model we've known on for ages, like since the 1970s, about the prevention of insomnia becoming chronic. And we put it into different factors of precipitating factors, which is just your what you've got anyway, your lot in life, whether you're, female, a bit more more common to be more of a, suffer from sleep disturbance. If you're a bit more of a worrier, a bit more prone to anxiety, you're more likely to suffer from sleep disturbance, a bit more perfectionistic tendencies of wanting everything fairly perfect, you're more likely. So there's these predisposing factors. Oh, I said the precipitating factors are the stressful things, like say something that's happened, like the exam or the trauma or the stress.
Yeah.
And then there's the perpetuating factors, and this is the one that we need to talk about. That the perpetuating factors are the one that make short-term sleep problems otherwise would have settled, they turn into long-term sleep problems. So it's things like the worry about not sleeping, spending excessive time in bed. Like just thinking I've got to get into bed early tonight. And you're in bed at, say, 9:30 or 10, but you're wide awake and lying there, not falling asleep till well after midnight. So those sorts of and people think they're doing the right thing, but we always explain to them, like, it's really important to match the time in bed with the amount of sleep that you're getting. So it's known as bed restriction or sleep restriction therapy, and it's the most important thing that can stop things becoming chronic. So matching the time in bed initially, so if you're only getting 4 hours or 5 hours, then we go with that and don't try to do too much more, and then gradually bring the bedtime earlier and earlier as you get sleepier and sleepier. So people often, they're doing the wrong thing, like they're doing either too much napping or avoiding napping altogether. Well, sometimes people think that, oh, they've heard napping's really bad. But if you have a 15-minute nap or 20-minute nap, it's absolutely fantastic. And should be encouraged, but not napping as in having, you know, 2, 3 hour, 4 hour sleep. That's not a nap. So that's, and sometimes like the screen time is a big, another perpetuating factor is too much screen time. Too much, like either too much coffee to find, you know, or stimulants to keep them awake.
Yeah.
Or not enough. People have given up. They said, no, I have a zero coffee, zero alcohol. And you think, well, you know what, maybe you're missing your morning coffee. Maybe one morning coffee well before 12 would be a really nice thing to do. So I think in general what it is that people get too sort of tight and too rigid, which is understandable because it's such a dreadful thing not sleeping, as we all know. It's a really awful thing. So people, particularly these diligent people, and they're quite intelligent, quite enthusiastic and, oh, you know, conscientious people. Yeah, conscientious and diligent and perfectionistic, and everything else goes well in their life usually. So why can't I manage this as well?
Yep.
So it's a paradoxical approach to take your foot off. You just think, well, okay, I better stay up a bit later then. That's strange, because you when you're not sleeping well, you'll go to Professor Google and look up
But I was going to say, if people Google the Sleep Health Foundation, will they find that report, or will they find information
they
there?
Will. They'll find lots of information, and they'll find all the, we've got over 80 different fact sheets.
Oh, so the one
that I was The one I was talking about just now is actually called Preventing Chronic Insomnia.
Okay, Preventing Chronic, okay.
Yeah, cool. And there's many, many ones from children right through to older age,
right.
Lots of different situations. We've got our reports. We've done some really fabulous research reports over the last 10 years. This is our 10-year anniversary, actually.
Oh,
we've been around for 10 years.
Awesome.
But we're only really, people don't know about us as much as they should. We want to be like the Beyond Blue of the sleep world, that people know to come to us for sleep, good quality evidence-based information.
That is excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, well, look, Moira, thank you so much for your time this morning. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, and like I said, I could talk to you for hours about this because...
I could too.
I know. but... I highly recommend people in the daylight hours jumping on and finding the Sleep Health Foundation
That'd
and looking into some more of your research.
Yes, and happy World Sleep Day tomorrow.
Happy World Sleep Day.
Thanks.
Thanks, Moira.
Thanks so much, Willie.
Bye.